Hey friends, and welcome back to the Shootproof Podcast. This is episode 002. We're pretty pumped about the feedback that we got from our first episode, and we're glad to have you all along with us. As a reminder, if you're watching this video, we do have an iTunes podcast that you can subscribe to. It's the audio version. And if you're listening to this on iTunes, we do have a video version over on our blog at blog.shootproof.com. Today we're joined by the amazing Anne Almasy. Anne is our edgy friend here at Shootproof, and she brings our cool factor up quite a bit by just hanging out with us. Anne's a writer, and she's committed to truth and transparency. Her work has been featured in the Huffington Post and Petapixel, and she's a regular contributor to Deadpixel. She loves helping people learn and find who they truly are, but communicating who you truly are can be difficult. Anyone who's written a bio for their website knows that. So let's go ahead and dive in. Well, hey, Anne.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We're really glad to have you. We want to learn more about writing and the way that it fits into a photography business. So first things first, you know, we hear all the time, content is king. Is that true? And what does that mean for a photographer?
I think it's totally true. I mean, So my example for myself is that I'm a terrible headline writer, and people talk about headlines all the time as being the thing that get, you know, it's why you click on this stuff that's like, this is gonna blow your mind, or you won't believe what happens when. But it's ultimately the content that gets something shared over and over again. So if people read something that resonates with them, or they see something that really impacts them, they're going to share it. It doesn't really matter what you titled it. Mm. That title might get that initial view and might help drive the traffic initially, but the content really, really matters. So I've seen people who put a lot of energy on that front end, on the headline side of things, but they don't really put any time or energy into the actual content. Mm. And then they feel frustrated with the results. But I think that's why, you know, people want like the meat. Like if you have this really pretty sandwich, but what's in it is, I don't know, can I say what's in it is shit, then that's a shit sandwich. No one wants that. Like you've got to have something good inside. Yeah. So yeah, content's totally king.
Cool.
Or queen, as it were.
To kind of go further on that, like what in your mind, what makes good content? Like when you're writing and you've written something and you're like, man, this is it. What is that?
Well, I can't say. Sometimes I've written stuff where I'm like, oh, this is so, like, this moves me. This is great. And then people are like, meh. But the only thing I know how to do, my little mantra is the only story I have to tell is my own. Mm. So if I'm writing something, I have to be sharing from my perspective, and I have to talk about it. I have to talk about something that matters to me, and I have to talk about it in a way that is actually moving to me. If I'm writing and I kind of like get really emotional, then I know that it's going to impact someone else in that way. And it might only impact one other person in that way, but it has to have relevance to me. Also because I want people to read the stuff I write who, I want it to be people who share my values, people that I want to be friends with, people that I want to connect with. I could write something that resonates with a bunch of people that I don't like. Mm. Like we have nothing in common. We would go out for drinks and not have anything to say to each other. So if I'm really true to myself in the words that I use and the way that I write and the stories that I choose to tell, then the people who read them and resonate with them are typically going to be people that I would want to hang out with, which I think is really key because it's connecting me to people all over the world. And I would like to know that if I ever am in that part of the world and I met them, it would be a good experience.
Yeah. So. Cool. Well, so you're a wonderful writer. You're also a photographer.
Thanks.
And I guess we're, you know, curious what can photographers do in terms of writing to, or maybe a different way of asking that is, how can photographers use writing to set themselves apart in their industry?
Yeah. Well, written communication is really important in the digital age or whatever you want to call it. You know, photographers are blogging, they're sending emails. Like even if you don't blog, you're probably emailing people, and communicating through writing well is important. It's important legally. Like if you send a bunch of mumbo jumbo in an email and you've created a miscommunication, then you've opened yourself up to some awkward liability potentially. But also I was just talking to someone who was talking about like hiring an interior designer, and the reason they met with this person is because the email they wrote back was really enthusiastic. Mm. So I think written communication really, really, really matters, and the words we use matter, and the punctuation you use matters, and your grammar matters. So some people struggle with that more. Maybe if you're a terrible writer, then just avoid writing. Because if it's not your skill, it's not your skill. But I think if you have any ability to write, it's really worth honing, because it tells people something about who you are. Just like a well-written bio communicates to your audience like who you are. A well-written blog post does the same thing. A well-written email does the same thing. Hmm. So words really, really matter. And yeah. I believe that wholeheartedly.
I love what you said about, you know, honing. This is it's a skill.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, some people are more inclined to it than others, but either way, you need to be honing it.
Yeah.
Do you have ideas or, you know, anything you could share that might help, you know, other people hone their skill of writing?
The number one thing that I think anyone should do, and I have to talk myself through this every single time, is to not hit publish the minute you've written something. If you're writing an email that's a little more like you're providing very specific information, or you're addressing a concern of a client, or you've written a blog post, or you've written an essay, or whatever it is, just give yourself some time. And the more important it is, the more you care about how people feel after they read it, the longer you should wait. And I really encourage people to have a small community around them who they trust to edit their writing. I have people that if I've written something that is like really meaningful to me, I will send it to them and say, hey, how is this striking you? Is this feeling, does this make you feel the way I'm hoping you'll feel? And sometimes people will say, oh my gosh, this is perfect. You have a typo here. Other times people will say, this, I feel like you're not quite there yet. And I need that feedback. And I think other people need that feedback. It's just like having a portfolio review with your photographs, like especially when you're, you know, newish to shooting, you need to know, is this working or not? Because, you know, when I first started shooting, every picture I took that was like well exposed, I thought I had just like made a masterpiece. And now I know there's so much more that goes into it. Mm. And having editors, having people who give feedback, having people who give constructive criticism is really the most important thing you can have. So just because I've written something and I'm really excited about it does not mean that's the time to actually make it live on my blog. I'd rather have to sit on it for a week and spend some time really perfecting it and tweaking it. Sometimes I'll go to sleep and the next morning I wake up and I read what I wrote and I realize it wasn't actually that good, or I didn't quite say what I was trying to say. And so, yeah, allow yourself time, reread, share it with someone you trust, and then you can hit publish. And there's always gonna be stuff that, there's things I look back on and I'm like, man, if I could write that now, I would have done it like this. But at least I haven't published anything that I really, really regret. So, it could still happen, but so far, so good.
Yeah. So I know, you know, for me personally, I struggle with connecting with the idea of voice and my writing. You know, sometimes I'm all over the place, you know, and maybe it's appropriate, you know, in an email to sound different than I do, maybe like on my personal blog or that kind of thing. But what advice could you give to someone like me who, you know, it's, I haven't quite defined my voice in writing, you know?
Sure. Like, I actually have a couple exercises that I use when I'm trying to write something and I'm really kind of hitting a wall. And I start writing down keywords. The first question I ask myself is, how do I feel? And I start kind of keywording that. What are like the 10 things that first come to me when I ask, how do I feel about this thing that I'm writing about? Mm. And then the second is, how do I want my readers to feel? And then I kind of keyword that. And I look at where those things overlap. And that kind of gives me, you know, like when you meditate, you have like a, I don't remember what it's called, like you have an object that you meditate on or a word that you meditate on. And it gives me a focus for my writing to know that my goal with this piece was inspiration, or my goal with this piece was humility, or my goal with this piece was whatever it is.
It's kind of like your mantra.
It's so my mantra. Yeah, it becomes the mantra for that piece. And that way, if I kind of start going off the rails, I either need to revisit those exercises because maybe I'm not writing what I thought I was writing, or I need to recenter and change the way I'm writing to fit that that goal that I'd set for myself.
Gotcha. So with your writing, you kind of to go back to one of your earlier points, authenticity, kind of being true to yourself is important. And you take that, to another level than a lot of people do, right? I mean, you're very bold with your beliefs and putting that out there. And
I try to be.
Yeah, yeah. And so I guess my question is, where's the line between being bold and being authentic and, I don't know, being inappropriate? Is there ever a time where you share too much does that exist?
I think that line is wherever you set it. That line is what you feel comfortable with. There are things that I just very recently wrote about my divorce, and there are people who wouldn't feel comfortable sharing that, and so they shouldn't share that. But for me, that was really important. So everyone is different, and I would never tell someone, like, this is the line, you should never cross it. I mean, there are people out there who've made a name for themselves being, like, incredibly inappropriate and vulgar, but that's them, and they're comfortable within those parameters. So I obviously have my own set of parameters that, for me, it's really about connecting with people who are like-minded. I want to find kindred spirits in the world. And to me, like, what makes life worth living is connecting with other people. So the more authentic I am in what I share on social media, on my blog, even with the photographs that I take, it isn't just about writing, but even in the pictures I choose to share with people, that's connecting me to people who share my values. Mm. And it means I have clients that I actually really love. It means that I have new friends and colleagues all over the world who I meet them and we have a drink and we have a great time. And I just was in Portland, Oregon, and I stayed for 2 or 3 nights with a girl I had really only known online for a while. But we'd had a lot of emails. We'd had a drink one time when I visited Oregon previously. And she's like, oh, you're going to be back. You can come stay with me and my husband. And I stayed with Courtney and Nabil. And it was like being with lifelong friends. But it's because we had had this connection. And that connection never would have existed if I hadn't been sharing myself openly. That's what encouraged her to reach out to me. It's what was the foundation of our friendship. And that's true for me in a lot of my relationships, is it comes from, well, I think every relationship comes from someone being vulnerable at some point. You can't have a real connection with someone without vulnerability. So at some point, someone takes that step to share something personal, to share something intimate, to do something risky. You can't be vulnerable without taking risks, without risking being hurt or feeling stupid. But I think it's worth it, because for every person who's like, oh, you're dumb for sharing that, there are going to be at least one person who it means a lot to them. And I think in most cases, there are a lot of people who feel connected to just vulnerability in general. You know, it makes us feel not alone to see that other people are experiencing the same struggles, or even finding joy in the same successes. Like, we want to connect with other people on all different levels, whether it's something kind of dark and sad or something really exciting and positive. Mm-hmm. Connection is what we're wired to do as human beings.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. So I wonder if you would be willing to share kind of what brought you to, the point in your career where you were ready to be open and be vulnerable, and what, how did that impact your business, and what's the story there?
Sure. Well, it was an accident. I spent a lot of years trying to just build a really friendly business where I got along with everybody and tried to take good care of my clients. But just over 2 years ago, I bought an ad in a wedding magazine, and the photo I submitted for the ad was of 2 brides, same-sex couple, and the magazine told me they didn't want to publish the ad with that photo because they were afraid they would offend some readers or some other advertisers, which is probably the bigger issue. And they certainly had the right to make that decision, at least at that time, they had that right legally. But I took issue with it publicly on my blog and just kind of, I really ultimately pleaded with them to change their minds, and I shared my case, and it got a lot of traction. I had half
500,000 hits on my blog within 24 hours. And thankfully, I had really good web hosting, so my website did not crash. But it was really overwhelming, and I lost a section of my client base. No one who had already hired me fired me. That didn't happen. Mm-hmm. But I definitely saw a tremendous drop off from certain people who just I wasn't getting inquiries from those sectors anymore. And it felt kind of overwhelming at times because people had really strong opinions about what I had done. The outcome I thought was really positive. The magazine did run the ad, and since that time, they've featured same-sex couples in their magazine. Wow. And I think history is already proving that is the right move. But it pushed me into a place. I talked to a friend of mine during that time, and he said, "You know, you've opened Pandora's box here." He's like, You can go cower in the corner, but you can't undo this. Mm. And he's like, you feel overwhelmed and you feel like totally shell-shocked by everything that has happened. He's like, but move forward, keep going. Like, your course has been charted for you, you just need to keep moving forward. And I did, and it's been really good because it let me cut out people and things and experiences that really weren't beneficial. And it connected me with people who, like I said, share my values and share my view of the world and how I want to live and how I want to create my community. Mm-hmm. And I've watched my community grow in really, really cool ways since that time. As overwhelming as it was and as emotional as it felt, I'm very sensitive. But despite all of that, like, it was worth it. I would never take it back. Yeah. So, yeah, that was kind of the impetus. At that point, I realized, well, if I can deal with that, then I can deal with sharing this story or sharing that story. There's a really, really interesting study. I cannot remember the name of the guy right now, and I should have looked this up before we talked, but this guy who's an anthropologist of some sort, and he has this theory that our communities, we can only manage relationships, manage up to 150 relationships at any given time, that our brains can't keep track of more than 150 relationships. So maybe you have like 1,000 Facebook friends, but you're really only aware consciously of 150 of them. Mm. And those might rotate over weeks or months or years, where at this point you're close to these people and at this point you're close to these people, but there's a limit to what we can withstand in our communities. And I've kind of held on to that number, that all I need is my 150. And so when I post something on my Facebook page for my business or on Twitter or on Instagram and I lose a couple of followers, I'm like, that's okay, because if I have 151 followers, I can lose one. If I have 3,000 followers, then I can lose 2,850 of them. Is that good math? I'm an artist, okay. I only need my 150, and those 150 are my sustainers. Those are the people who will hire me again. Those are the people who will say kind things about me and refer me to others. Those are the people who will take me out to lunch when they see that I'm actually going through something kind of terrible in my personal life. And those are the people who support me professionally. So kind of remembering that bigger isn't necessarily better. It's really the quality of the relationships that we have. So I've been really trying to focus on my 150. Like, these are my people, and the number itself isn't really relevant, but just realizing that the size that we all tend to chase after, the size that I always felt like, oh, they have 50,000 people following them. Like, oh, but you're not friends with 50,000 people. Mm. Like, that's just not how that works. So, you know, if what you value is what I value, which is actual like personal connection and communication with people, then sometimes smaller is a lot more valuable.
Well, thank you. I know, you know, this is, these are pretty deep topics, you know, vulnerability and authenticity. And I just really appreciate your thoughts on community.
Yeah.
So in closing, how can people find out about you if they're intrigued? They're like, who is this Anne Almacy? Where can I go to find out more?
My website is annealmacy.com. I hopefully will put like a little banner on this podcast so people can see how to spell that. I've got a website, a blog, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, all that good stuff.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Well, a huge thank you to Anne for coming in and sharing her wisdom and a little whiskey with us. We just want to remind you that Shootproof really truly believes in community, and we want to do whatever we can to foster community and environments that are uplifting and educational for photographers. We welcome your comments. Feel free to comment on our blog, send us an email, come on by and tell us how we're doing. And if you want to find out more about Shootproof, you can do that at www.shootproof.com. Thanks, and we'll see you all next time. Music for the Shootproof podcast is provided by Triple Scoop Music.